Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We go right to the ground tonight in Baltimore with the very latest. Our own Geraldo Rivera is there. Geraldo.
We have grown up.
Hey, Sean, it's a very excited crowd where I am standing right now as the deadline has come. The deadline has come. And now we will see if the people clear. I'm with the State Senate Majority Leader, Pugh.
Come on, get out of the way, man. Get out of the way.
Don't touch me.
Stop blocking my camera. Stop blocking my camera. Come on. Come on, stop it. Stop it. You're making a fool of yourself. You're making a fool of yourself. Calm down. Just stop it.
Wait a minute.
We don't need your false coverage.
I need you all to back
up.
Stop exploiting black people. Wait a minute. Stop exploiting black people.
We don't need them across the street.
We don't need your false coverage. You got this black man protecting you from black people.
Sean, I'm with the State Senate Majority Leader to the, if we can get her away from these vandals here. Senator, I'm sorry.
But we want...
So here, turn around, Senator. We're live now. Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
We want the media to move back. Okay, because people want to, they want to disperse.
It seems like they want trouble.
No, they don't want trouble.
Stop exploiting black people, Ronaldo. Stop making money off of black pay.
So tell me what.
Stop making money from what, news off of black pay.
Where do we go tonight, State Senator Pugh?
We want our people to go home, but we also need the media to move back because this is just inciting people.
So you tell me where to go. We'll go.
Okay.
We'll go. All right, come on, let's move over. Let's move over. Okay.
Hey, all right. Geraldo, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's true. Okay, here turn. Okay, Sean, I know that was very unpleasant, but it shows you the extent of the emotions.
Well, it's a
here.
Very emotional thing because
yes.
People have been out here all day long. They've been demonstrating very peacefully. And, you know, I think that what people see are camera lights. And when you see that, it incites people. But these people have been out here all day long just demonstrating very peacefully. And they're demonstrating because they care about their neighborhoods and they care about their communities.
All right, that was last night in Baltimore. Good morning. 9 minutes after 10 o'clock, before I set the scene for you, the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is speaking right now on the violence in Baltimore.
To reach his or her God-given potential, regardless of who you are, where you were born, or who you love. The inequities that persist in our justice system undermine this shared vision of what America can be and should be. I learned this firsthand as a young attorney just out of law school. at one of those law schools that will remain nameless here at Columbia. One
Little
of my
joke,
earliest jobs
Yale.
For the Children's Defense Fund, which David had mentioned, I was so fortunate
She's
to work
the,
with Mary
Mayor
Wright
David
Edelman
Dinkins Library
as a young
at
lawyer
Columbia,
and then serving on the board of the Children's Defense Fund. Was studying the problem then of youth, teenagers, sometimes preteens, incarcerated in adult jails. Then, as director of the University of Arkansas School of Law's Legal Aid Clinic, I advocated on behalf of prison inmates and poor families. I saw repeatedly how our legal system can be, and all too often is, stacked against those who have the least power, who are the most vulnerable. I saw how families could be and were torn apart by excessive incarceration. I saw the toll on children growing up in homes shattered by poverty and prison. So, unfortunately, I know these are not new challenges by any means. In fact, they have become even more complex and urgent over time, and today they demand fresh thinking and bold action from all of us. Today, there seems to be a growing bipartisan movement for common sense reforms in our criminal justice system. Senators as disparate on the political spectrum as Cory Booker and Rand Paul and Dick Durbin and Mike Lee are reaching across the aisle to find ways to work together. It is rare to see Democrats and Republicans agree on anything today, but we're beginning to agree on this. We need to restore balance to our criminal justice system. Now, of course,
this is Hillary Clinton, the Democratic presidential candidate, speaking up at Columbia.
It is not
a rare speech
enough
for her.
Just to agree and give speeches.
At least a rare
about
speech,
it.
Not for money.
We actually have to work together to get the job done. We need to deliver real reforms that can be felt on our streets, in our courthouses, in our jails and prisons, in communities too long neglected.
He's right about that.
Let me touch on two areas in particular where I believe we need to push for more progress. First, we need smart strategies to fight crime that help restore trust between law enforcement and our communities, especially communities of color. There's a lot of good work to build on. Across the country, there are so many police officers out there every day, inspiring trust and confidence, honorably doing their duty, putting themselves on the line to save lives. There are police departments already deploying creative and effective strategies, demonstrating how we can protect the public without resorting to unnecessary force. We need to learn from those examples, build on what works. We can start by making sure that federal funds for state and local law enforcement are used to bolster best practices rather than to buy weapons of war that have no place on our streets.
All right, this is the Secretary of State presidential candidate Hillary Clinton speaking up at Columbia University, the Dinkins Center on Constitutional Law. She's absolutely right. You know, Noam, when you start arresting kids for pot, whatever it is, 12 years old, 13 years old, and they get into that system, where are they going to go? And I tell you, the one thing that you didn't see, because I taped it earlier, before all of the confrontation and the action, was the Bloods and the Crips. I had a bunch of them all come together, kind of descending, and there they were, all these big, strapping young men wearing their red or their blue. And they were there keeping the peace, which was good. The problem was, as I looked at them, I swear to God, every one of them seemed absolutely stoned out of his mind on junk. The glassy eyes. I mean, I've been around a long time. The glassy eyes. The thing is, they have all be, these inner cities have been ceded to the gangsters and the gangbangers and the principal economy. I'm telling you, this was like, I had a flashback to the South Bronx from the Jimmy Carter era, or Harlem going back 10 years before that. It's like Baltimore is 30 years behind in terms of the renewal. And when you contrast, and I'm not being a booster here. I'm telling you the facts as an eyewitness reporter. When you see how our communities of color, we've got problems. Of course, Kai Gurley and Eric Garner, we have problems with police in the community. There's no doubt. And there's a lot of tension. But when you see how the communities themselves have risen and become far more intact than ever they were with shops and schools, yes, there are problems. But these are functioning communities. In Baltimore, I swear to you, this West Baltimore neighborhood where all the action was, Bloods, Crips, I forget the other one, some other similar militant name. This is such a throwback. And the economy, the basic economy, and the principal employer is the drug trade. So when the cops come into that community, they come in thinking that every young man is a bad guy, that every... And many of them are engaged in illegal activities, like Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old whose death is at the center of the current turmoil, with a long record, drug dealing, etc. The antidote to that is not only firm leadership and reasonable policing, but firm and professional, but also economic opportunity. Now, the tragedy of what happened Monday night is, so you burn out the CVS, the big drugstore that they put right in the heart of everything. You burn out the senior center they were building next door, 60 beds. You burn out all those mom and pop shops along the main drag there. Who's going to invest in that community now to provide legitimate jobs that are in competition with the drug trade? And even if you had an entrepreneur who is willing to invest, who's going to insure it? If you have this contentious relationship, A, where the police are considered an army of occupation, and you have the ever-present danger of anarchy and arson, what businessman now is going to say, okay, you know, I'll take a fling and help... you know, Johnny and Janie go on the straight and narrow. See, what Hillary just said there, what she left unsaid is, there has been a Democrat in the White House for 6 years. The first black president in history. Has he ever been to that neighborhood in Baltimore? I'm just guessing that he has never been there. I know... All I know is that the entitlement approach to inner city life has been an utter abject failure. It has allowed, you know, on the one hand, you had the war on drugs. And the other hand, you had the great society war on poverty. And the war on poverty and the war on drugs became allies. They became allies. The war on drug made the community and the cops opposing forces, and the war on poverty allowed young men to be in the streets and not be with their families because their families are going to be taken care of by the federal government no matter what. This is a disaster. These deaths, what, like Eric Garner, what job was he doing, Eric Garner? I don't know. All, I don't want to go through Michael Brown. What? These deaths have to be a clarion call that we need a new thinking on this. And President Obama can't wait now or rest on his laurels or do what she did in her final days as Secretary of State and take a victory lap. No, this is the time for him to become engaged. This is a time to reorder the way we deal with inner city America, or we're going to have Monday night in Baltimore repeating. We're going to have Freddie Gray's repeating, and we're going to end up in a very sorry place.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
Let me set the stage for you. Welcome back at 26 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. So I got there at about 7 in the evening. I got to the location in West Baltimore where the CVS is located and all the shops burned out. The presence of law enforcement and the guardsmen was awesome. To the extent they absolutely dropped the ball on Monday night. Remember how woefully insufficient the police force was in Baltimore on Monday night. Totally inadequate to prevent the anarchy and the violence that chewed up so much of that neighborhood on Monday night. On Tuesday night, last night, a totally different scene. There were shield-wielding officers there from the city of Baltimore, the county of Baltimore, from the surrounding counties in Maryland, Maryland State Police, the ATF Rapid Federal Response Team, and the Guard. So you had at least in that core there several thousand no-nonsense law enforcement officials who were in no uncertain terms instructed to have zero tolerance. In other words, so humiliated, rightfully, and so embarrassed, rightfully, were they by their woeful lack of preparation. They saw this coming. The first violence was on Saturday. How did they let Monday happen? When they saw what was that, why did they wait until Monday evening to declare a state of emergency? What were they dreaming? What, you know, fanciful notion did they have that this was not going to get out of control? But Tuesday night, totally different. So remember, there's a curfew from 10 at night until 5 in the morning. So I get there at 7. Now it's 8 o'clock. The crowd, rather than thinning, is thickening. More and more people are coming. They're coming from the various side streets. You could see the visible, I don't want to say nervousness, but anticipation of the law enforcement. You could see them, for example, I'll give you one very obvious sign of that tension building. They went closer together with their shields until their shields were interlocking, almost like Roman warriors. So now their shields are interlocking. Now they have made a perimeter, I should say. You can go this far and no further. Okay. So now the crowd is in this relatively contained area, several blocks, and it continues to build. Now it's starting to get dark. Overhead, two police choppers flying very low and close with an intense searchlight on the protesters as they gather. So you've got to picture this. You've got the shields locking, the choppers overhead, and intense anticipation and vigilance.
And don't forget, every single television camera in the world trained on them. I think that's a really important element.
I absolutely agree, and let's speak to that, because does the media exacerbate or reflect or report, it is an excellent question. 9 o'clock, grad bigger. 9:30, still bigger. 10 o'clock, I go on Hannity, and there you saw what happened with the crowd and the trying to stop me. By 10:15, the CS gas, the rubber bullets by 10:20, 10:25. By 10:30, a third of the crowd, and soon, nobody. It was magnificent.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
38 minutes after 10 o'clock. I'm delighted that you are here at 77 WABC. I have a brief intermission. My coverage of Baltimore will continue this afternoon. We're looking for this mom, this wonderful mom. Toya Graham, her name. She saw her 16-year-old throwing rocks. She recognized him despite his all-black garb and his ski mask and his gloves. She ran out of her home, ran down to the streets where he was throwing rocks with his buddies that the authorities whacked him upside the head, humiliated him in front of his friends. The result, he walked off and she set an example. We need every mom, not just in the inner city, in every city, town, and hamlet in this country to behave like she did. We need the dads to come home. We need fathers. That's what was so woefully absent. What I saw yesterday. I mean, God bless Toya Graham. She's a single mom, as are the vast majority of the moms in that neighborhood. The dads are in jail behind nonviolent drug offenses, many of them. We just have to rethink that. The president has to declare not a war on poverty. We know where that went. But a kind of a rethinking of the relationship between the cops and the communities. An investment in these neighborhoods. Or also, you got to stop sending kids to jail behind marijuana and stuff like that. It just doesn't make any sense. There has to be respect. These communities have to feel that the cops are on their side, not the occupying army. But last night was very dramatic in its way. I mean, it wasn't Afghanistan or Iraq, but it was a lot closer to home and therefore in many ways more relevant. Here is a brief clip of my coverage, my live coverage on Sean Hannity's 10 o'clock show last night on Fox News.
All right, just hold your ground. Just hold your ground. We're okay. Just hold your ground. It's hold your ground. I don't know what that is. What is it? It is. All right, so it's obvious that the police have lost their patience, and they've started with the flashbangs. Don't run. We don't run. Just take it easy. Just stay with me. All right, just stay with me. When the police line advances, we'll move back this way.
All right, so it was very kinetic, very spontaneous. You react to it based on experience. But the police were not being aggressive. They were being professional. And even though we got gassed, it was CS gas. It wasn't a tear gas, so it wasn't that bad, although my eyes are still kind of teary. And they shot some of the, I wish I brought them. They just stank so bad. I didn't want to bring them on the train. They have these plastic bullets that are now, I mean, almost the size of a small BlackBerry. They come firing out there. It's not like a weapon per se. It's almost like being hit by a fastball.
Huh.
You know, a baseball pitch. I mean, that's how it would feel if it impacted you. So it would be a non-lethal, although you could probably break the skin, but they are very effective. It wasn't as bad. You know, I've been in Ramallah and East Jerusalem, and, you know, the crowd control there is a lot more vigorous. But it was very professional, and don't get me wrong, they were ready for trouble. There were, I think, 10 arrests. Is that what you're reporting today?
Yeah. I mean, that number could tick up a little bit, but that was as of midnight when they held their press conference last night. It was 10 arrests.
10 arrests. Okay. So it's interesting that I don't know what's going to happen tonight. I'll be reporting there live from the scene again. First of all, I hope I don't become an issue. You know, with all the attention being directed at my showdown with that young man and others. I don't, you know, with all social media, everybody's got a camera. That's also what has changed. You mentioned that. Everybody's got a camera. It's not just the traditional news media. It's every, you know, all you need, every YouTube
blog
channel,
theater,
every bloggers, every, you know, many of them seem like the Occupy Wall Street type.
Oh, they are the crowd. Occupy Wall Street type.
You know, all the white ones are. The kids, though, and most of the troublemaking was, it seemed to me, unlike Ferguson, Missouri, most of the troublemakers seem to be local kids, teenagers. That's why the parental aspect of it is so important. But ladies and gentlemen, I am acutely interested in what you think can be done to alleviate this misery. How do you fix the undeniable credibility gap that exists between urban police forces and the community? And how do you fix the communities themselves? So 866 Geraldo is the number. Be delighted to hear from you. Let me, okay, here is Jim in New Jersey. Hi, Jim. Thank you for your patience. You're on the air. What's up? Are you there, Jim? All right, let me try Jeff. Jeff, you there?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
Geraldo, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad to see that you're safe this morning.
Thank you. I'm glad to be safe.
Listen, you know what? I was going to talk to you about the economy and just see
how... Go ahead. I mean, whatever you want to talk about.
What's that?
Go ahead, sure.
The economy is stalled at, they said, 0.2%.
Is that what they announced, 0.2%?
Yes.
That's pretty dismal.
Yes,
that's for the first quarter of 2015.
Now, the whole thing is, you know, and I don't want to go get on the whole thing because I know you'll probably get upset with me.
It doesn't matter if I get upset with you, man. That's life.
I want to talk about low-skill workers and stuff like that. Now, do you think the people of the neighborhood, the citizens of that neighborhood, are going to be able to rebuild by themselves? Do they have the skills, the knowledge to perform the work, to rebuild? Or would they have to go to, say, outside people to have the work done?
Well, I don't know, but that's an excellent question. But let me say this. You reminded me of something that I have to say. Looking at that community, wouldn't it be grand if everybody that worked in any one of those shops was getting $12 an hour, let's say? If you're getting $12 an hour times 8, what is that, $96?
I think that works out right. Now I know why we're ready.
I think that would be a good start toward giving dignity to those people. Now, in terms of rebuilding, like I said, I don't know who's going to invest the money. I don't know who will risk their capital in that neighborhood unless and until the neighborhood itself can show that it is embarrassed by what happened, that it is taking action on its own to make sure that never happens again, and does something to replace this. I cannot understate how omnipotent and omnipresent the drug trade is. I know a junkie when I see one. And to take that junkie culture and junkie economy and put it in the colors of gangs, militant, armed, dangerous, more often than not criminal gangs, that's a recipe for disaster. It seems to me that this really should be a huge national priority. That Republicans, I mean, Hillary Clinton alluded to it. And maybe that's just a campaign talking point. I wish I had heard more of that kind of bipartisan language from her a lot earlier and from other Democrats and Republicans. This is a real crisis. This is a very real, undeniable situation that this is far more dangerous, it seems to me, to the well-being of the United States of America than Iran and some of these other things that we seem obsessed with. It is the enemy at home, the enemy of inequality, the enemy of instability, the enemy of the disappearance of the religious institutions and the family as the main social structure. There were a lot of clergy out there yesterday, actually a bunch of them from New York, a couple of guys from the Bronx, and you'll be hearing from them after this.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, your turn, 7 minutes to 11 o'clock. Let's start with Jack, who's calling from upstate. Jack, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, good morning, Geraldo. I'm sitting here, I was watching on the TV. You know, it's the cops out there and then the guard out there, the state troopers. This and what these kids destroyed, this is going to cost them a fortune. All they needed was one pissed off mother. Now, if they could get a few more there.
I so agree with you.
No problem.
I so agree with you. Imagine if every mom was like Tanya Graham. Every mom went out there and grabbed her 15-year-old and humiliated him. For his self-destructive macho. I totally agree with you, Jack.
I'm 83. I was born in Queens, in St. Albans. Well, the cops, they never hit us or nothing. They would just bring us home. And my old man would come out and wail on us.
That's exactly what we need. I'm telling you, but you need the old men. Where are the old men? I want the old men. I want, you know, I My dad passed away in 1987. He's been gone. He's only 72. But I miss him so much, and particularly at times like this when you long for fathers. He never hit me, ever hit me. But he could humble me with a look or a sigh. And I just, oh, man, it's like hurting my dad or having him say something like I've embarrassed the family. That was like, oh, man.
It would pierce right through you.
Right. Much worse than any detention or, you know, I'm telling you. Okay, let's go to Jeff in Staten Island, line one. What's up, Jeff? Hello, Jeff. Oh, Janet. Sorry, Janet. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Geraldo?
Yes, hi.
Hi. You know something? I think it's not as simple as a mother controlling a teenager. I believe that the news media whitewashes the fact that groups of outside agitators, they're actually professionals. If you go into the Progressive Labor Party website, which is a Marxist-Leninist group, they have buses leaving at a certain time to go and agitate the crowds, and they're anti-police. And it's not just as simple as the way the media portrays it.
You know, I have to say, Janet, and remember, I was there and I'll be there again tonight. I didn't see that. I really didn't. And I've been around the block a few times. I know a professional agitator when I see one. The white kids, let me say this about the white kids that were there, all about the same age, no, a little older, I'd say, like college age, most of the white kids. And all of them, like, picking up garbage. I mean, there are some with masks over their face or helmets, but they were so few compared to, they seemed like naive, naive is a bad word, and they seemed like innocent. And it reminded me of my idealism of that era and how I was heartened by it rather than the professional agitators from the Occupy people. They pissed me off. These kids really gave me reason for optimism.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back at 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. It is, what is this? This is Wednesday. My days are all mixed up. April 29th. Wednesday, April 29th. Absolutely drop-dead gorgeous day outside, as it is in Baltimore, where I shall be returning after this broadcast. A couple of notes unrelated to the Baltimore rioting, or I think more significantly, the investigation into the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who got his back broken somehow in police custody and his larynx shattered. I have to say something, Noam, about two other cases before we get into the Baltimore situation. Do you remember the murder of 15-year-old Martha Moxley in Connecticut? And the subsequent conviction many years later of Michael Skakel, the Kennedy cousin. The Kennedy connection is why he got all the press. Two 15-year-olds, a quarter of a century after the fact, he gets convicted. In that case, I thought, personally, whether or not he did it, I don't know. But I did not think under any way, shape, or form that the prosecution proved that case beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't. I think that he was convicted based on the prosecution's eloquent summation and the sympathy factor for the Moxley family who had suffered so grievously so long ago. And, the defense representation was not excellent, let's face it. And I thought as a result, Michael Skakel spent this, he's out now on an appeal bond, but he spent a decade or more behind bars. Similarly, and the reason I bring up Martha Moxley, the Eton Pates case, the 6-year-old who disappeared in Soho, changing the life of all of us who lived in Manhattan with children at that time. It may be that Pedro Hernandez murdered this boy, as Hernandez confessed. But I have to tell you that I believe that the reason this jury is struggling with this case right now is the implausibility that this confession is legitimate. It may be, and maybe I'm absolutely wrong, but I cannot for the life of me see a case where Pedro Hernandez, under the facts and circumstances as I understand have been introduced in this case, Eitan Pates' murder, is proven beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the test. It isn't that you think he did it, or he may have did it, or he probably did it. It's that he did it beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt. Not beyond all doubt, but beyond a reasonable doubt that he did it. And I, as in Martha Moxley and Eitan Pates, I don't see a case beyond a reasonable doubt.
You know, when you face somebody in a room and you can tell there's something a little bit off about him, when you watch the videotape confession of Pedro Hernandez, he does. He seems a little off. And his, of course, the defense has argued all along that he's delusional and is mentally ill. And if you watch that videotape, now, I didn't watch it in the courtroom. I watched what they released on TV. But to me, right away, I could see, well, this guy doesn't seem straight. You know, there's something a little bit off about
doesn't
him.
Doesn't he seem? And, you know, I have total high regard for the NYPD. I can't say that enough. Doesn't it seem that this guy would confess to coming from Jupiter?
Yeah.
If someone said, didn't you come from Jupiter?
We just have to plant the seed in his head.
Yeah, you've got to encourage it after three times he thinks it's his own idea. Oh, yeah, I came from Jupiter. Oh, yeah, I killed the kid. You know, I just, like I said, I don't see it, and I will not be at all outraged if he is acquitted or if this is a hung jury, which I think is what's going on right now. Okay, your call is Justin in Bergen. Thank you for your patience. Justin, what's on your mind?
Yes, Geraldo, thank you for taking my call. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I just wanted to comment about the lack of the father figure in the black families. One of the things I wanted to comment on, as I was a teacher, I started my teaching career in Newark during the riots and a period of time. And
can I interrupt you 1 second, Justin?
Yes.
Has Newark to this day recovered from the riots of 1967?
No.
To this day?
No.
A half century has told. That's
not
my point.
Not to my knowledge, because I visit the, I'm a university supervisor now and visiting some of the schools there. To mentor interns and student teachers, and there's areas, pockets, that are still have not recovered. And one of the other comments I wanted to make, when my students who I would meet after school in Newark, they would tell me that the school was their sanctuary. They felt that they were protected there. And I have a real concern that this situation is going to redevelop again in other cities across the country.
Well, it will if we don't address it, but you've got to address it. I really believe, and I appreciate your call. Very, very good call, Justin. And for your service as a teacher under those difficult situations. I think there are Republican solutions. Now, you've had the Democrats. The Democrats are motivated by compassion. And, you know, they used to call us bleeding heart liberals back in the day, whatever party you were affiliated with. Compassion didn't fix this problem. What will fix this problem is pragmatic idealism. What is pragmatic idealism? You can have the same desire, fair shake for everybody, equal opportunity for everybody, fair wages for everybody. But let's have the federal programs particularly, and most of it's federal money, let's have them designed to keep families together. Pay the father to stay home. Pay the kid to stay off drugs. I know he's supposed to do that. We should get the Chris Rock, Marty, get the Chris Rock routine. He's supposed to do that. I get it. He's supposed to do that. I still want to bribe him. Okay, let me take some more calls.
Before you take that call. So last night, you played this clip at the top of the show at 10 o'clock. There, you went live at the scene of what you thought might be another night of rioting. And you were trying to talk to this local state senator about what was going on. And there was a kid who kept getting in the camera shot, ruining your camera shot. And you went toe-to-toe with him. You were like, get the hell out of my camera shot. I'm doing a live shot here. And he yelled back at you. And eventually he relented and got out of the way of the camera. What I thought was interesting was when the cameras went, and I thought when I was watching it, I was just, oh, who is this? Who's this jerk that's in your camera angle? But when the camera went off, And the video kept rolling from local bloggers of your conversation with him that never aired on Fox. I thought this was awfully interesting.
Where'd you find this?
Oh, I have my sources. Here's a little bit of what it sounded like.
You want to report that we're thugs and we're breaking
You got this big black dude
protecting you from all these black folks. You ain't the ones that need protection. Report for us. You're working for Fox News. Why are you running away? I'm not
He's running. He got Garago on it right, y'all. Look at this. He got Garago.
So they said you were running, and no shock, they hate Fox News among that community. You're probably not surprised to hear. But I thought this was an interesting moment. You stopped. You turned around. I don't know if you remember. It was the same guy who was in your camera shot. You turned around and you had this conversation with him. And all of a sudden, you made him into a normal person. Here's what it sounded like.
I want you and Fox News to get out of Baltimore City because you're not here reporting about the boarded up homes and the homeless people under MLK. You're not reporting about the poverty levels up and down North Avenue. 2 years ago, when the 300 man marched and we marched from the top of Hilton to from Hilton and North to Milton and North, you weren't here. But you're here for the black riots that happened. You're not here. You're not here for the death of Freddie Gray. You're here for your story. No, I want to talk to you without the camera. Hey, this is not for YouTube. This is serious. I want the cameras off.
You know, it's so difficult in those situations to have any kind of reasonable dialogue. He's filled with his righteous indignation. He gets an idea. Fox News is the devil. And nothing else matters. Nothing matters like the half century that I have bent over backwards to advocate a fair shake for everybody. I understand his frustration in life and the big picture. But to me, what he needs more than anything is a sense of optimism, a sense that tomorrow is going to be better than today. Now, I know that you can say something like that and it sounds kind of Pollyannish and crazy ideal. But there's a difference between pessimism and optimism in terms of longevity, health, for a reason. If you think that your life is meaningful and will become more substantively meaningful as you go forward, you're going to behave differently than if you think tomorrow is going to be as bad as today or worse. That you're going to be just like your friend Freddie and your friend Mikey. You're going to end up in jail. It's inevitable. You might as well join the Bloods or the Crips. At least they'll take care of you in jail. They'll take care of your family with some of this drug money, and they've got a wad of cash, and you're holding two nickels in your pocket. I had some people come up to me after. It's interesting that, you know, this YouTube stuff. I had some people come up, particularly the older folks who were there, and apologizing for the kid and apologize. I say, don't apologize. I get it. I understand it. I got five children of my own. I get it. And then one of them came up to me as I was about to leave, like after midnight, and said, you know, please don't blame. I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you. Just keep the peace, talk sense to the kids, and do the best you can without making this situation even worse. This notion that if you make it bad enough, that finally you're going to attract attention, that don't fly anymore. That don't fly anymore. Not when you have a divided government and you have Republicans in power. You think that they are going to be cowed into spending money on inner city Baltimore? Never happen.
But it does attract our attention, and we talk about it for a couple of days, and then it goes away. And what this kid, I think, was saying to you is, I can guess this without even meeting him, that he's third or fourth generation impoverished in that West Baltimore community. His grandparents are there. His parents are there. If he has them, he's there. And he's saying, hey, when can I jump the line? When do I get to live like the people in the other part of Baltimore live? And so maybe that's why he's there, is he's so frustrated. And so he's taking it out on Fox News. Granted, that's silly. But he has nowhere else to go. The cameras are there watching.
What kind of dad will he be is the issue of the moment. That is the biggest challenge facing America. That young man, do something so that when he becomes a dad, if he's not already, and I doubt he is, he's only 16 years old, probably 17 at most. I mean, he may be, but I doubt it. Give him enough optimism so that when he has a child, that child won't feel that they have no chance and that they might as well confront the cops because the cops are going to stick them up no matter what. like that op-ed in the New York Times talking about burning Baltimore to attract. I mean, geez, that is exactly the opposite that I thought President Obama would accomplish as the first black president. I'll tell you that much.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
25 minutes after 11 o'clock, we're talking about the situation in Baltimore, the situation in all the big cities of this land, where there is not only disruption at home, but also a contentious and sometimes violent, sometimes deadly relationship between some in the community, a tiny minority, and some in the police forces, a tiny minority there as well, I would like to think. Baltimore, a fascinating experience last night. I'm going back again tonight. The big news there is Friday is the results of the autopsy of the 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who died very suspiciously in police custody. And Saturday, they are calling for a massive demonstration downtown. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who was the chairman of the new Black Panther Party, now representing a group called the Black Lawyers for Justice. He and a coalition of other groups are saying that there will be 10,000 or more demonstrators there in front of City Hall, and a weird thing at Camden Yards.
Yeah, you know, the game today was supposed to be like a mid-afternoon game between the Orioles and the White Sox. They postponed the game the night before because of all the looting. And then today's game, they're going to play, but there'll be nobody allowed into the stadium. So it'll be an empty stadium. This has never happened in the history of Major League Baseball. No fans will be allowed in, but they will play, the White Sox and the Orioles. And the reason Major League Baseball said they went on with it is because they said they didn't want police resources to be taken away from what's going on in the city and brought over to the stadium. They said best way to handle that was not let fans into the stadium.
It seems, I guess, but I'm telling you, when something like that happens, you know that forevermore, what happened in Baltimore in these last days and weeks will be memorialized. You know how baseball, particularly of all sports, is. It will be a trivia question as long as we have baseball. And I really wish they had not taken that decision. What happened was on Saturday, you had these protesters, and very organically, community people very angry. And there was an Orioles game. And they, you know, like every stadium, they have the, like Yankee Stadium under the L, you've got all the bars there. They have something like that, only, you know, more gentrified in Baltimore. So Baltimore was playing Boston. So you have very energetic fans, to say the least, on both sides, wearing the various colors, the Orioles colors and the Sox colors. And most of the fans, white people. And so they're at the bars, and the protesters come by. And so the protesters are protesting, and then the drunken baseball fans are saying, we don't care, get out of here. And some pejoratives also exchange. And you had some violence between the two groups, the largely white baseball fans drinking beer on the right-hand side, and the demonstrators, mostly young and black, on the other side. Now they're reacting to that. They are reacting to that by saying no fans at all. Now, it would seem to me, just me, now I know that they have precious limited resources. But why not? That line I saw of cops, why not have that line 5 blocks from Camden Yards? In other words, you put the cops there, you got the barricades up, you can separate, you only get in if you have a ticket or the e-ticket or whatever it is. You can, okay, you're a legit baseball fan, you get in, and then you have the metal detectors as they do everywhere these days in all professional sports. And let the city at least have a semblance of returning to normalcy by doing something like this that will live in infamy. I think they permanently enshrine that scar in a way that I think is unfortunate.
You know, Rudy Giuliani was on Fox and Friends this morning saying he would never in a million years have done something like this. He said he wouldn't have shut down school like they did in Baltimore. He said he wouldn't have shut down the stadium like they're doing at Camden Yards because it's letting the rioters, the looters, the demonstrators win. And he said he would never let that happen on his watch. And he said he would have been more aggressive in the arrests that they've made.
I think that they were The problem with the arrest, the 230 arrests on Monday, is they came too late. I mean, once they started busting them, they were rounding them up. There weren't enough cops. There weren't enough officials. It was, you know, first of all, Baltimore has a black mayor, a black police commissioner, a black majority on the city council. I mean, this is not just about race here, period. But the mayor is, as charming as she might be, seems a real rookie. She seemed out of her depth. I mean, that statement about giving the protesters room to riot. I mean, this is like crazy stuff. You don't say something like that. I mean, it's like, I mean, it may be that she misspoke, but she had plenty of opportunity to correct it and didn't correct it until the next day. After that, now she is permanently enshrined as the mayor who said, give the protesters enough time to, you know, to riot.
You know, the governor had signed off on bringing the National Guard in over the weekend, and he was waiting for the mayor to sign off on it as well, and she didn't do it in time. And so he was ready to, he threw her under the bus, essentially, on CNN the other night, saying, you know, that he had signed off on it, was just waiting for her to do the same, and she never did.
When we come back, your calls at 866-HERALDO. I especially am interested in hearing your thoughts on the topic du jour, obviously. We'll be back after this.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
It was so interesting. Welcome back, everybody, at 38 minutes after 11 o'clock. I have to leave in about 10 minutes to catch that noon train to back to Baltimore. But, you know, I believe in faith-based families. I don't care what your faith is. I just think that it gives you that additional structure that children particularly need. But it was pretty funny yesterday. You had millions of clergy out there. Every stripe. I saw a rabbi. I saw all kinds of different preachers and priests and ministers. At one point, I'm laughing because they were like dueling megaphones at one point. They would write up megaphone against megaphone. Jesus save me. No, Jesus save me. You know, different sects, different faiths. Right. It's so funny. It was hilarious to see the dueling megaphones. But I met these two preachers from the Bronx, two real down-home fathers from the Bronx, evangelical ministers who were there really doing a righteous thing. And I interviewed them for Fox. They're there.
And so what do you anticipate, Pastor, will happen when the curfew starts? Well, our prayer right now, so we're trying to target those guys that look like they have the highest potential to do damage tonight. Most of them are very young, very angry. So we know if we could reach them and encourage them to move it on, and we're praying that they don't go to jail, just reminds them, like, going to jail is not going to change the situation. So that's what we're here to do, and that's what we've been doing. We're just going to love people. We're going to encourage people when the curfew comes. Hey, go home. Just take it easy. Just sit down. You can watch whatever on television. So we're just here to encourage people to go home, and that's the best thing. And, you know, we're utilizing our pastoral authority. We're loving people, first of all, just coming down from New York City.
Excellent. Good luck, both of you. Thank you.
From the Bronx, they doing the right thing there in Baltimore. A white one and a black one, you know, salt and pepper team, but very, very sincere. They had their children with them, their little children with them. But I think the world of people that really can extend themselves to help others. Hi, Abe. Thank you so much for your patience. What's on your mind today?
Geraldo, I'm glad I got through to you. I won't take up much of your time. I'll just take a moment or two. I happen to be a youngster. I'm 90 years old.
Whoa, mazel
tov. I'm living here in New Jersey. I love life. I do everything. I enjoy everything. Now, let's get back to Baltimore, which is just a microcosm of all the neighborhoods. In other words, I could name them, you know, Chicago and those things. Now,
Detroit, Cleveland, right.
Awful. But awful doesn't have to stay. It's a question of going to the goal and making a plan. It goes like this. It's not a question of what they didn't do that they should have in Baltimore. Yes, they should have. Finally, they sent in things with shields, but it doesn't change a damn thing, as you said. It's called pragmatic. Idealism is what you want, and that's what I am. And here's the thing, and I'd like to talk to you some more off on the side. You pass me over to Naomi Leighton or Marty Berman or Marielle, because I'll give them my email. Maybe they give me your email. What has to be done for a change immensely is every young, now what do we call them today? Black, Afro-American, they're Americans, in school and starting young, 13, 14, 15, 16, right up the line. They all learn, and here we go, a useful trade, T-R-A-D-E, as all the immigrants did, my parents, that came from Lithuania years ago. Now, I'm talking about plumbers, I'm talking about electricians. If they have the smarts, they'll go into computers. The health field is wide open. Every time I go to the outpatient here in Central State, you have people doing all kinds of tests on me. They're paid well enough because they're responsible people. So I'm going to knock it off now because in 10 minutes or less, you have to go back to work.
All right, all right. Abe, what great advice. I tell you, that's great advice. You know, there were in my day, I don't know about now, vocational schools. Now, you don't want to automatically take an inner-city young person and steer them to a blue-collar job because the blue-collar jobs are disappearing, the industrial jobs particularly. You can't make, I mean, how many jobs are there in the auto industry now? I mean, you used to pay, I don't know, $60, $70 an hour, and then they renegotiate these contracts now in South Carolina, and they make $14 an hour. Not that that's a bad job, but I'm just saying I don't want to restrict them. But there is, I think, a kind of a diminution in the respect paid the vocational trades. And I wish that that were not the case.
Well, I think there's still a desperate want for those jobs. If you watch, and I've covered these stories before, when they open up the apprenticeships at these unionized jobs, whether it be a plumber, construction worker, you name the gig, there'll be people who camp out 2-3 days to get in line for that. So the people who desperately want those jobs, because here in the city, they pay really well.
My point is there aren't enough of those jobs, as indicated by the fact that the applicants so overwhelm.
Yeah, they do.
The number of available jobs. But the other trades he spoke of are absolutely, he's absolutely right. The health industry. Now, as the population ages, he's 90 years old. He's still, kicking butt. As the population ages, we'll need to consume more and more health care. You need all those, name the specialty in the hospital, there's a zillion of them. Computers also. You know, you'd be the next Facebook. And if you're not the next Facebook, at least go to work programming for somebody else or, you know, making a decent living without having to break a sweat. I mean, that's fine too. But just be prepared. Get something done. And I don't want to put down liberal arts. You know, there is an aspect of life that I love, literature, art, and aspects that my wife takes my daughter to the museum every day. She went to Cooper Hewitt. The new Cooper Hewitt has just opened on 91st Street there. It's gorgeous, gorgeous. But I mean, that's wonderful also. But just, I think that when you see the differences between what a high school dropout makes and what a college grad makes, I mean, it's like night and day. They're in different pages. The college grads, they have an unemployment rate below 5%. The high school dropouts, like in Baltimore. Baltimore, the unemployment rate among this target population is north of 30%.
Wow.
So north of 30%, of course they're going to be drug dealers. What, you know, north of 30% are unemployed. And there's a direct correlation between dropping out of school and that unemployment. All right, Mr. Leighton, I'm going to say goodbye. I'll be in touch.
All right.
I'm going to run downstairs to Penn Station, grab that noon Acela Express back to Baltimore. You hold down the fort here.
Are you on Hannity again tonight, 10 o'clock?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll find out. But
Fox.
Ian, John, and David, hang on. Speak to Noam right after this break.
City, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
All right, Geraldo's on his way via Amtrak back down to Baltimore. We'll cover more of what's going on down there. It was quiet last night. So we're looking at this press conference that the Baltimore City Police gave at about 1 this morning. They said they had made 10 arrests. I imagine the number will tick up a little bit when they have another press conference a little bit later this afternoon. Those numbers will tick up a little bit. But definitely it wasn't what Monday night was. And you can thank, for sure, the people on the ground, the community leaders, and, of course, the police officers and everybody in law enforcement. Both sides were doing their best to keep a lid on, and I think they did a very good job of it. You know, we were talking before about some of the other cities that our powder kegs ready to explode, and we threw in, Camden, my former hometown of Trenton, which has just gotten worse over the years. And then we said Newark, and man, have I gotten a lot of blowback over the last 20 minutes from people in Newark who are really angry at us, including that city and cities that are having problems. And we even just heard from the mayor's office, who has tweeted us, Ross Baraka, saying that, hey, if you haven't been paying attention, Newark's crime rate has gone down and people are moving back downtown. So, okay, you're right about that. I've seen that. People buying up property downtown Newark. Some of those neighborhoods really beautiful, always have been, but some of the neighborhoods that weren't beautiful are beautiful again. So they can make a turnaround, but it has been a long time. It's been since the riots back in the 60s. Let's go back to your phone calls. Let's talk to David in New York. David, you're on the Geraldo Rivera Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Noam. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is that I don't believe it's fair, accurate, or helpful for anyone in the media to be talking about a war on police.
Well, I'm with you right there. I mean, give me a little bit more detail, though. What do you mean?
Well, I think it sets the stage. Words are very powerful. I think it sets the stage for more conflict. If I'm a police officer, then it really puts me more on alert or maybe increases the chance I'll be more aggressive. I drove through a small town in New Jersey yesterday, Noam, and on the sign, a big sign, and this was really a very tiny town, and it said, "We support our police." I mean, are now we declaring that there's a generalized conflict between civilians and police?
Right, that we have to declare it outright like that seems sort of silly. Well, who was saying that? I didn't hear people saying there's a war on police. It was the media, you mean?
Yeah,
or was it
I've heard this term. And look, Noam, at what's going on in Chicago right now, this massive reparations for all these people who were tortured. Massive reparations have been approved for all these people who were tortured a long time ago, but it's finally coming out. I mean, I don't see anybody saying, based on just one event 20, 30 years ago, that there's a generalized war on citizens. I mean, this is not about a war. War is something that you do out of nobility in the United States.
All right, well, David, thanks so much. I appreciate that. I think there'll be people on the other side who would say when military might moves into their city like it did in Ferguson, they might feel like it is a war zone against them, against the people. So you get both sides there. Let's see. John in Manhattan, you're on the Geraldo Rivera Show. Good morning, John.
Yeah, hi, Noam. With all of these recurring generations in the inner city of young black men who have no father figure and have not ever developed a sense of discipline and have just a free-for-all attitude, I think it may be worthwhile for the states to legislate creation of youth military-like youth camps, wherein unless you can prove you're going through a legitimate school regimen, you get drafted into these camps where you learn discipline and trades. And I know that.
And we force people to go there, John. Who's forced to go there? Who do we line up to go there? Who gets to decide who ends up in a camp like this?
Well, kids who have committed crimes.
Right. But they end up in juvenile delinquency homes, and sometimes they get the training they need there. Not always. John, thanks so much for your call. We're running out of time here on the Geraldo Rivera Show. So Geraldo's on his way back to Baltimore. You can watch him tonight on Fox News, but then you can get the really dirty details of what happened behind the scenes right here tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. Have a good one. Curtis Scooby, they're next.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.